Okay, so Shem, so again, welcome, and it's great to have you here. We've been talking about this a long time, and so Shem Gabori is an internationally acclaimed violinist, a member of the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, and soloist, recording artist, and very active with your own, I guess your own company, would we call it, the innovative,
My own ideas. The innovative
music program. So tonight we have an example of some of the programming that Shem's been sort of assembling for a while. So tell us the title of tonight's program. Let's just start there. So
I can use some help with the title, but the gist of it is Evolution of a 21st Century Violinist, which of course would be me. But maybe evolution is a good way to start. And these are pieces basically that I love. I've always loved percussion, and I always thought playing violin with different percussion instruments was really like one of my favorite things to do. So over the years, I've been exploring and commissioning some pieces for the program, and I think tonight we have probably three of the best efforts from that end. And can I launch in a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Tell us a little bit.
The first three pieces on the program are works written by violinist composers who played their own works. And the first one is from 1720s. The second one, 200 years later, maybe, I think 1923. And the third one from 1954. And each, other than Bach, who kind of set up a lot of things for us, the other two violinists absolutely knew the other guy's works. So Izai knew Bach's work. And Grażyna Bacewicz, a Polish violinist, she knew all of Izai's works and all of Bach's works. And it's kind of, as I've played them over the years, I always thought, God, there's something about these pieces that they go together. And I started trying to figure it out. And there are actually some seed ideas that are kind of maybe just below the conscious level when you're listening. And what I'd like to do is sort of point out for you what those are, and then move into our composers here, John and Doug, who knew all these violin works and added to the list, right? So the first thing is, this is like seed ideas, just from the very beginning of the Bach. I'm gonna give you a shorthand of it. Three tones that stick out, that will keep coming back when you hear it. And the number three is very important. I'll show you a couple of things why. Begins with the beginning of a fugue with the three. three notes. So he takes this little motive and kind of hides it, and it comes again three notes. Three of the same ones. Okay. So skip ahead 200 years. Who wrote this lived in Paris, end of the 1800s, 1900s, our cultural center of the world, and Claude Debussy was writing music. In the whole tone scale. So Isaiah has these three, and then a theme again. Built on that. Skip ahead another 30, 35 years. Behind the Iron Curtain, no longer having an international career. Same three notes in a whole different emotional world. So I don't know, to me this stuff's been like ringing around in my head, and it seems to end together when you can tell me after the third piece. We'll take a little pause as we reset into the percussion works, but I think this stuff, it's like this is a violinist's mind at work, so that these pieces are floating around in your head, and underneath the cement this stuff's bubbling away, these little ideas. So, Doug, your piece came next, called Slowly She Turns. We looked at those three violin mm-hmm. pieces together.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things about being a composer is that you write for all different kinds of instruments. And some people play more instruments than others, but you know, most composers write for instruments that they don't play. So when I'm writing a piece, I immerse myself in some of the repertoire for that instrument, that combination. If it's not something that I play guitar. So if I write a piece for guitar, I'm immersed in that already. But for this, Shem, you know, gave me some examples of things to listen to, particularly in these three pieces that we're listening to, that you'll hear at the beginning of the program tonight. And so they were certainly in my mind as I was writing. Part of what the real kind of nuts and bolts of it is when you're working with an instrument, of course, there's a lot of idiosyncratic things that as a composer you try to understand, but you can never really understand them as well as a player who's been devoting, you know, their lives and countless hours to figuring out all of those kind of nuances and things that are easier this way, why don't you try it this way? So we had some, as I always try to do, have some kind of dialogue back and forth, working on, you know, I'm coming up with some ideas and saying to Shem, well, how is this? And Shem saying, well, it could be more like this, or it could be more like that. So that whole process is a lot of what I like about composing, that interaction. But it's also this thing that Shem was talking about sort of getting the history kind of coming through you in some way. And how much of that history is really in your bones just depends on what, you know, for every composer, what their own, you know, what their listening life has been like in a certain way. John, how does this relate to your piece, John?
It's a good question. I met Shem, and we played together. We played my piano quintet together. I played the piano part, and Shem was in the string quartet, and that's how we first met. So I guess we met performing together at first. And then Actually, the pieces on this program were not so much what we talked about, but a piece by George Enescu called Memories from Childhood, which Enescu was both a violinist and a pianist. So I relate to him because I'm a performer and composer. He was also a composer, obviously. So my piece actually took more cues probably from the Enescu than the pieces that you'll hear today, but I wouldn't say that it's unrelated to the pieces that you'll hear today.
Well, see, now part of the thing is that what is so, one of the things that's amazing about John is that he spent many, many years, right, as the studio pianist for one of the most important violin classes at Boston University. So all this violin repertoire is floating around in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's correct. I was going to mention that I worked for a number of years for Roman Totenberg, who died recently at 101. I think he died in 2012 at the age of 101. So I played for
his...
He was still teaching, you know, right up to the last point there. But I worked for him for about 5 years playing violin and piano repertory. So yeah, it sank in finally.
I hear those gestures because I mean there's certain things that are idiomatic gestures for the violin, and they come out and in the hands of really masterful composers. Like these guys, in my opinion, it comes out with an original voice. And that, in our time, is really hard to do, to come up with a sound that's uniquely yours and could not be anybody else's. So I think that's one of the things I like about these guys.
So, Doug, do you think you're original?
So if I may
I think that's a hard one.
It is a hard one.
Well, let me just jump in here for a minute. So certain, obviously the first three works, I guess Bach, we could consider him somewhat of a violinist. I mean, he was a tremendous violinist. Okay, so we have the first three where it's really kind of a tale of in a certain sense. I mean, the familiarity with the violinist, the violin notwithstanding among the composers, but in a sense it's a kind of, you know, we have these three sort of, I think, core repertoire sort of works of violinist composers, a tradition, I think we could call
yes.
it, that was very prominent for centuries, and now we get to the, you know, the mid-20th century and the 21st century. Where do you see this tradition of the violinist composer? I mean, we had you know, Paganini, we had all of these virtuosi violinists, composers. In a sense, we're kind of veering off a little bit in from that track, from Bach to Isai to Basevich. I mean, what has happened since the postmodern, I guess? Is there still this thread of the violinist composer, and where do we find that today?
Well, I'm certainly not today's violinist composer.
Right.
But I hang out with a lot of composers. That's my my contribution to it. But what I'd like to see this sort of program illuminate is that all the musicians, all the violinists, we have the potential to reach back into a huge lineage. And the music of today comes from somewhere else. It doesn't just like pop out. There's a sense of continuity. And in a sense, I find it, and I think a lot of my colleagues do, that there's a broader sense of community, even though it's an historical community, that there's a vitality to it. And that for each of the pieces on this program, when they were first heard, they were totally original. Nobody was doing anything like it at all. So it's a little bit of an indirect question, but I think that by starting to expand our minds around it in the student community, in the devoted listener community, like such as you all here in this room, that type of awareness comes like, oh, right. Yeah, right, this connects with that, this connects with that, that we come from somewhere.
Right.
We're not isolated here in this small pocket that's getting smaller. It's bigger than that.
Right. So then there's another theme I just wanted to touch on here with this program tonight and also some of the programs that you're developing
yes.
apart from this, which, being a 21st century violin, we're in a global community now. We're in a global village, right? And we have a range of influences, and you know, we have an international sort of scope to our work now. And tonight is an example of that. I mean, certainly we have a work by Simone Shaheen,
He's one of the most prominent experts on classical Arabic music, and he has been able to write his own music, which, while being true to its roots, also has his own original voice. And the piece that Rex and I are going to play for you is called Dance Alhambra. It's a dance piece from a theatrical work that I'm the co-author of with Robert Schenken and Margaret Booker. It's the story of a young girl coming of age that's told in a normal theatrical way with words and characters, and it's also told through the live performance of 16 different American music compositions by six living American composers, of whom Shaheen is one, and some Broadway standards, some opera, there's a whole host of things. But this piece is in particularly interesting because it's a dream sequence that you can imagine in the courtyard of the lions in the real Alhambra at 3 a.m, a spirit comes to life and starts playing and waking up. And it was my idea, like, well, how did these people get the violin? And we started looking into it, and then Rex started telling me that, like, a very simple and very effective answer,
To Shem, that the violin made its way to Western Europe by way of the Middle East and the Near East because of the bow, which was made of horse's hair from horse tails. And with the migration of people from the East with their horses, they brought their bowed instruments with the horses, and that's what introduced bowed instruments into Western Europe. And then, especially female horses, because their tail hair is particularly coarse, and that's why there are so many bowed instruments from China and from the Near East and from the Middle East, and then it made its way across North Africa, up into Spain with the Moorish people, and across the northern route, up into Western Europe, and then eventually the modern violin kind of made its way back into the Middle East. Instead of being a single string fiddle or some sort of rebec or some kind of other traditional Middle Eastern instrument, they started using the more modern shaped instruments. Mm-hmm. That's pretty important. Without the horse, you know, there's no bow. So when the horses came, so came the bows.
So speaking of horses, do I understand also with Douglas's piece that there's kind of a Silk Road thematic reference?
Well, that's
reference
kind of like my
is that, is that true?
Fanciful. That's,
no.
This is my feeling about the piece. I think this is a really cool synopsis of the journey of the violin from east to west, in front of your eyes. But
Well, part of the thing, because when Shem asked me to write the piece, he said he wanted the piece for violin and percussion with two instruments. And there's not some tradition of that. There's not some rep. You can't go back to Bach's time and find that. and so essentially what it is pulling together these, you know, Shem was talking about this continuum that violins can go back to in this whole thing.
It's a dialogue.
So that's happening on the one side, and then the other side is the continuum of percussion, particularly the kind of stuff that's written in this piece and the kind of stuff that Rex plays so well, among many other things, is things that go back to African roots and Arabic roots, and that whole journey that Rex was talking about. So in a sense, this piece was looking at taking these two traditions and trying to figure out some way to do something musical with them both. So,
I think when you were, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you were conceiving this piece, you asked me, or in previous pieces that we've done, you asked me for like a list of whatever instruments that I had. Mm-hmm. You wanted to know what I had in my collection and what pitches I had available and what kind of instruments I had available so that he could sort of pick and choose out of my pile what would be useful and what would be available.
Right.
Also, so a lot of you know, so it, my setup is for these pieces is, it's specific to the piece. And
right, which is veering a little bit away from what we're talking about. But for a violinist, you know, he's got a violin, and it's tuned the same way essentially all the time. It's a very particular thing. It's a very set thing. But for a percussionist, you know, there's a huge range of possibilities. There's all the normal orchestral stuff and snare drum and timpani and all that kind of business. But beyond that, there's almost an unlimited. I mean, almost anything in this room could be a percussion instrument.
Absolutely.
Right? Because he could hit it with a stick or his hands.
But I asked the composers to use instruments that so that the whole program that Rex and I do can be fit on one wheelie cart for Rex. So no furniture,
so that limit, yes.
No furniture, no marimbas, no bass drums.
It has to be schleppable, that's the one.
Right. Up and down the subway stairs, that's onto the parameters. The train, onto the plane.
That's the parameters. But when John was writing this piece, and we wanted to do something with wood, mm-hmm. and we wanted to do with woods, I gave him a list of like every wood block, every pitch, of temple block and wood block that I had, every clacky thing made of wood that had a pitch to it, and I gave him this big list, and he ignored the entire list. He wrote for wooden bowls, like salad bowls or nut bowls. And so, you know, my list is still available, but I've got bowls. And they sound good.
You make them sound good.
So John, this is a New York premiere, this piece.
Yes.
New York piece. So it's been done, I gather, at least once elsewhere or
at Bennington College.
But it's a brand new piece of 2014?
Yes.
Wow. So what more do you want to tell? What else can you tell us about it? I mean, we have the wooden bowls, the violin, and any other important signposts or?
Well, I wrote for the expressive lines and the fine pounding that you've all come to expect from Shem and Rex. Was one part of it. And I could maybe follow up a little bit on the bowls. I really was considering using a lot more instruments.
Yeah.
But I had this one pair of bowls that we had in our kitchen, which I've discovered tonight we split one of them, but we're using half the set anyway. Some olive wood bowls that I was given, and I started to realize that there were all kinds of ways that you could get different sounds just from that pair of bowls. So I just thought I wanted to fill them with things and strike them in different ways. It's a pretty intimate piece, I would say, overall.
Yeah, so it's a perfect for it.
And so I wasn't looking for tons of noise. What I can tell you about the piece, it's a small suite. There are three pizzicato movements that are kind of dialogues between the bowls and pizzicato violin, and they connect more melodic movements. So there's the first one is called economical. The second one is called tranquil. The third, emphatic. And the fourth is called maitreya, which is a Sinhalese word which means loving kindness. So sort of meditation. So you were talking about motives of three, you know, three-note motives or three-part motives. I think there are a lot of short motives in my piece. They're not necessarily three notes, but there are three pizzicato movements, which are all pretty much the same material, slightly varied material. So if that helps.
Yeah, and what about the title? Ingrained from childhood?
Yes, that's the allusion to wood. Ingrained from childhood, and the allusion to Memories of Childhood by Enescu, which was the piece that we talked about. There are no quotations from it or anything, but it was what I was thinking about in making the piece. Plus, Shem showed me some astonishing photographs. You have to remind me the name of
Peter Layton.
Peter Layton. Photographs of trees by Peter Layton, which were also, I looked back at those and thought about those as I was writing the piece. So
I performed the Enescu with a series of photographic images that, while Enescu is writing a typical 19th century reflection back on his childhood and some of the events in it, we assembled Peter Layton's photographs in a sort of a psycho-emotional stream to get that was that fit with the music, but it didn't illustrate the music. It was its own series of memories, and that's what John is referring to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like psycho-emotional. That's it. Yeah,
psycho-emotional. Good. Dan, you asked a question about, you know, well, we're in a global village. Where is this going? And I think it's actually, there's a way to address that question.
Okay.
I think we all know what information overload is. And part of the problem today is like there's too much. How do you filter it out? What do you focus on? What do you choose? How does somebody devote 3 and 4 hours a day as a kid to learning to play the violin when there's all this other stuff? So these are just filtering out.
Right.
But what is really interesting about each of the earlier composers on this program is that they all lived in a geographic area or had a social environment where they had a huge network of influences and idea. Bach, I think, traveled no more than, what did they say, 200 miles from his birthplace in his entire life.
Right. Right.
But he had a family clan of 60 or 80 people all over Europe who for 100 years had been collecting the best music written and keeping it, the most innovative music. He had people delivering him music from Italy,
sure,
from England, from North Germany. So he had that information flow,
right,
and that information flow came because there was commerce happening and ideas going along with the commerce. Mm-hmm. Izai lived in Paris, which was at that time the intellectual capital and artistic capital of the entire Western world. And he said he believed in writing international music, German, French, Belgian. This was his idea of international at that time. And Basevich had all that, but she was in the isolated pressure cooker of a giant concentration camp. So it got compressed, but she had it earlier on.
Right.
And we have it just because, like, here we are in New York, you know, and how many different types of music recs do you play in a week? Right?
6 or 7 at least.
Right. Entirely different genres of music, and I've had periods like that. Same, a lot of you in this room listen that way or you play that way. So I think the issue is, how do you filter it out and what are your values in choosing what you're going to take in?
Sure. It takes a lot of discipline, a lot of focus to find your nutrition, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well. Good. But certainly, in terms of a program and in terms of a scope of our presentation, we definitely your programs definitely reflect a broadening of the of the borders, as it were. Certainly, in this evening, as we go from you know, really core European classical violin works to a broadening of the horizon. Good. Well, there's one other thing before. I think we're almost ready to get going here, but there's one other question. I couldn't help but notice, and it may be completely incidental, but I thought I would ask nonetheless. You and the composers you've commissioned, as well as Simone, who isn't here tonight, but you've commissioned him as well, and Jerry Hemingway. I did want to ask you a little bit about them, but the point I wanted to ask about was that you all are born very close to one another. You're of a generation, very clearly, born in the 1950s, within
right.
a few years of one another. Is that a complete coincidence, or does it mean anything to you? Do you feel that there's certainly we all have a certain kinship with our cohort, as it were, but nonetheless, this seems almost like it almost seems to have an intention behind it, as if there is a common idea behind it. It was just a curiosity as I look at all of the dates here. I just
true.
Might ask. So it's just incidental, I guess.
Don't know.
Right.
I mean, there's something to it.
Right. Well, certainly, you know, culture does go in waves generationally, and there are, you know, there's something to that. But it's something that I think about, certainly as we explore our musical ecosystem, you know, these kind of factors come into play at different times, but I guess tonight it's just incidental, we could say.
We all think we're younger.
That's true. So one last question about the piece that we haven't spoken of, which is a piece that, while you disavow being a composer, you are a composer credited One work tonight with along with Jerry
Hemingway.
So how to tell us a little bit about and the title Madagascar, again another international reference, the Madagascar variations. Tell us a little bit about that.
Jerry Hemingway is a percussionist I used to do a lot of work with, and we were in school, we lived in New Haven together and played with Anthony Davis while he was at Yale, and we did a lot of work, and he's an omnivore when it comes to music and world music. And we were listening to this zither and rattle music from Madagascar that was like astonishing. The rattle was played by a guy. He had two condensed milk cans squished in the middle with pebbles and did this virtuosic stuff that, I mean, you'd think there were six people playing. And the zither was a column zither with a bunch of resonating strings and so many, I mean, I couldn't keep them all tuned, but this guy did. And so it was this kind of thing, and this kind of sound was very haunting. Mm-hmm. And we came up with the idea of something like it that involves the Scottish bones. Mm-hmm. Clackety, clackety, clackety. Mm-hmm. You know, people play the spoons, just like playing the bones. And so we put this piece together to use as an encore for the Anthony Davis Violin Concerto, which he was featured in as well. Mm-hmm. So this was our little encore piece. And then I persuaded Rex, do you have your handiwork?
I do.
I persuaded him to get involved with this piece, and he very kindly labored in his craft shop to create his own instruments.
I made about four different pairs of these trying to figure out exactly what I wanted. I like to go through garbage and get things that are useful and turn them into something reusable. And so these are actually a part of a bar chair. And so I made bones, and I cut them out and, you know, put some indentations in there so I could have them, you know, have my fingers, you know, fit them. And so I put about four different pairs of these together, different thicknesses and different materials. And these came out to be the least offensive. So that's why I'm using them here tonight. That's it. So we have.
Anyway, it's not a composition, it's just some fun.
It's a fun.
It's like home it's music at home.
Well, good. Okay, well, good. Well, thank you. And,
okay, thank you all for coming. We'll meet at the